at the casino. She lost all her money. She said, don't feel sorry for me, no. Don't feel sorry, honey. But if you wanna do a lady a favor, here's what I want you to do. Just loan me $2. Oh, until the next time I see you. But these last $2.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Smooth Soul Monday edition of the Rodcast. And that's when Patrick plays jams intended to soothe the tortured soul of sports fans out there who may have had a tough weekend. Not the case for Longhorn fans that come up with the big win over the Aggies to send themselves to the SEC championship game, where they will get a rematch, revenge game against the Georgia Bulldogs. Actually, Georgia, I think, technically is the away team. Texas is technically like the home team, even though they'll be in Atlanta, which will basically be a home game for Georgia. Texas will be where they're burnt orange. They don't wait to wear the icy whites. I'd prefer they wear the icy whites, but they'll be considered a home team, so they'll be wearing the burnt orange in that matchup. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up. We also will talk a little bit about some of the NFL news notes and nuggets from over the weekend. We'll talk some Texans, talk a little Cowboys. Also, both of those teams getting a win over the holiday weekend, too. There is also a Rod's rant we'll dive into. I'll get into some of the details from my rewatch of the Texas A&M matchup. We'll talk about that too, and we'll also get to your horn headlines here momentarily. We got all that to get into, but first, Patrick not only comes up with the musically themed day of the week, so we appreciate his creativity as it relates to our Smooth Soul Monday, but also he comes up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, which is already posted at the Horn ATX. What is the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, Patrick?
Topic for the Big Fat Poll today, who is the MVP for Texas against A&M right now? Trey Wisner winning it, no surprise there, with his 200-plus all-purpose yards in the game. With 77% for Trey Wisner, 17% for Vernon Broughton, playing his probably best game of his college career, and then Michael Taft at 6% also had a big old game for himself, get that big interception. And some big plays there for Taft as well, but defense overall, great game. So defense overall gets a big nod.
I agree. And then somebody said you could put the O-line on there. Could have put the O-line on there.
Yeah.
I mean, O-line had a great game overall, especially considering Trevor Goosby was thrown in there for Kelvin Banks. So O-line could have been there. But to me, that's coming out of that game. There are just now certain elements that you've grown to trust and you've learned to trust after watching this team for 12 games. And defense is at the top of the list. Gunnar Helm is probably at the top of the list. He's your leading receiver now. Matthew Golden's probably at the top of that list. Offensive line has now redeemed themselves, and they find themselves one of the more trustworthy elements of this team. And then Trey Wisner, someone we did not expect. The workhorse now for this Texas running game. So did not expect that, and those to me are elements that are trustworthy enough for you to win the SEC title and make a run in the college football playoff. And that defense, like I said, we're going to have the conversation, and we've been talking about it for about a month now, about where they stand and where they rank historically among the greatest defense in Texas football history. I think it's better than any defense that I played on, and I played on one of the best defenses in Texas football history, that 2001 defense. I believe Manny Acho recently said it's better than any defense he's been on. And he was on some really good defenses. I'd like to get players, former players who were on all-time great defenses and get their opinion after watching this defense, if it's indeed on par with the defenses they played on, if not better. Because, you know, obviously comparing this defense to an all-time great defense, you know, it's going to lose some of the, I say you lose some credibility because they haven't faced an elite offense, and I will acknowledge that they haven't faced an elite offense. But still, even with a season of a sample size and them not necessarily facing a prolific all-time, you know, an elite offense in college football, I don't know if you can be more dominant than they've been. I don't – I mean, at this point, I mean, they allowed in that game against A&M, first of all, no offensive touchdown. The only touchdown came from a non-offensive touchdown. There was only one for running backs, one run that got at least 5 yards. Just one. The Aggies supposed to be a running football team. That's supposed to be what they do well. Like, that's their calling card. And Texas just took away their identity.
Yeah.
Just, they weren't able to, it's amazing.
And this is a thing that you can say about this defense. At the end of the day, we'll see how long Texas goes into these playoffs. But the reality is, this is a Texas team that could play a lot more games. And when you talk about elite defenses, if you say, well, you do that for 15, 16 games, you stand up that good for 15, 16, something that no team has done in college football because you just don't play that many games.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that gives you a different level where you can say maybe our regular season wasn't, but how many, you know, we had to play an SEC championship game and then three or four different playoff games. Yeah, if you're trying to get to the national title game, that's a huge task for any team. And so I think that could put them in rarefied air of a team that if they continue to play like that for that stretch of time, that's impressive.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. And we don't, like I said, don't know what kind of offense they're going to face in the postseason. But Georgia's offense, although Carson Beck is playing better, I mean, we know they got some offensive identity issues. Georgia does not have a great offense. That's not how they're going to win that game. That's, talk about a defensive struggle. That game could, honestly, I could see that game if Texas offense can take care of the football and not give Georgia short fields. That could just end up being a defensive struggle. We could be talking about a game 20-17 or 17-13 kind of game. It could be one of those. because I wonder if Georgia's going to change much in terms of their defensive game plan they had versus Texas. When you get 7 sacks and you dominate a team, you know, in one phase the way Georgia did, you know, that's why it's hard to beat a team twice, because Georgia's probably not going to change a lot. I mean, they could. They can go in there with a totally different game plan, but why would they when it worked so well?
Yeah, you figure they're going to come in at least with a similar game plan. They'll have some other tricks up their sleeve, and they'll be ready for if things take a turn. But
yes,
in the same part, why would you think if you're a defensive lineman, if you're the defensive coordinator, go, everything we did worked, and they never really stopped it. I mean, they figured it out a little bit better in the second half.
Yeah.
But we also want to, like, we made them have to bench their starting quarterback for a series.
Exactly.
Because of how dominant our defense was playing. Let's go do that again.
I think, yeah. So I'm with you. I think that's why some, you know, advantage of the second matchup, obviously, between the two. I'm not going to say it falls with Texas, but Texas will come in with more, they will come in with solutions to those problems that Georgia presented initially. And Georgia will probably most likely come in with the same game plan. A lot of it will be the same game plan because it worked so effectively. It wasn't like, oh, man, they had some moderate success. No. They had 7 sacks, and they dominated Texas right at first half.
Yeah.
So I think they'll come in with that, and they'll be ready to adjust. Texas, they'll probably come in with a lot of the second-half adjustments that they made versus Georgia, which we have talked about ad nauseum. But they'll probably come in with that, and maybe the game will probably look a lot more like that second half, but it'll be just kind of a defensive slugfest between Texas and Georgia. That's what I'm expecting, because Georgia doesn't really have great skill positions. Carson Beck's playing a little bit better, but they're going to go into that game trying to win it with their defense, and they have the necessary materials on defense to provide all the solutions that you need to the antidote, if you will, to Sark's offense. They got D tackles that can stop the interior run game for Texas, or at least be able to hold point against it. They got edges who can, you know, keep contained. They have linebackers who can smother the space that Sark creates. And they got secondary guys that can tackle in space really well. Now, you can get separation on those Georgia DBs, but you got to have time to do it. And last game, Texas didn't have time. There were guys open. They didn't have time. And then on top of that, Quinn, on top of not having the time, he didn't handle the pressure well when they got to him. So he's got to handle the pressure better, and they're going to need time to be able to make make them pay downfield when the wide receivers can create separation, which I think they can against the Georgia DBs. But the quick game that Sark loves so much and the screen game that Texas loves so much, Georgia has the ability to smother it because they got DBs that can tackle real in the open field, and they got linebackers who have range to get out there and smother that space. And then on top of that, the D-line, they got edges they can keep to contain for the split, the wide zone that we love so much, right? We talked about that, right? 69% of your explosive runs in the last 2 weeks by running backs have come via the wide zone, a split wide zone of some kind. And then the interior runs, they can just hold point because they got the big bodies to do it. So that's just a matchup issue for Texas. But because your defense is so good, they won't separate from you in the game. Like that'll be a close game no matter how bad your offense plays or how inept your offense is. Georgia's not going to be scoring a lot of points on that defense.
Yeah.
Unless you just give them non-offensive touchdowns and short fields like you did in the first game.
Yeah. No, I mean, and like you did in this game as well. I mean, you give the block punt and don't allow anything off of it. So, I mean, it'll be an interesting test. Yeah, I think that it's going to be really big for Texas wide receivers in this game as well. That the last few weeks, they have not gotten the separation they needed to over and over again. They haven't made the big plays downfield, haven't caught the balls when they need to. So, I think that if DeAndre Moore can get there and get a big player, Isaiah Bond can get back to the form he had earlier in the season, Ryan Wingo maybe makes a big play, though that would be a huge difference for Texas in this game because they are going to challenge you to go downfield. They are going to challenge you to beat them, and we think our best players are better than your best players. So we don't have to over a lot of defense on your secondary downfield because we know Quinn is not the best downfield passer, and we trust our guys to be close enough that you're not going to make those plays, and they haven't in the last 4 or 5 weeks. They haven't really had a bunch of downfield dominance, and even when I know some of that's because they're dropping safeties back and they're playing the three high, I know that that's somewhat of an issue, but A&M, you could have gone out and got some on them and you weren't really able to. A couple of these other games you had opportunities and you weren't able to take advantage of them. That'll be a big one against Georgia.
We get first half Quinn versus A&M or that third quarter Quinn, which we've gotten. I mean, the third quarter for the last two games for Texas has been disastrous. I don't know if they're cursed in the third quarter or what's going on. They got to figure out some way to be a little bit more focused and polished in the third quarter. They don't have to have great third quarters, but you can't have a third quarter where you just giving up points and having turnovers.
Yeah.
And it's actually started kind of at the end of it. Like I said, you missed a field goal, and then you had the disastrous third quarter on top of that. And to me, I think, for Quinn, that first half was, I thought, as good as we've seen Quinn play in a long time. I thought he was extending plays.
Quinn, before he got hurt with his ankle, looked really good.
Same thing, yeah. Kentucky, I thought he looked great. First half and then second half. So I know some people are very upset, and they think Quinn's a liability at this point. And there are some plays where he is. Even that pick six, it was tipped, but he shouldn't have been throwing that ball. That guy was not open. And I don't know if it's intercepted, if it wasn't deflected, but probably still a poor decision in the red zone to throw that football.
No, but then you look at that one he got to Gunnar Helm.
Oh,
that's one of those passes that Gunnar Helm comes down with, and you're like, who has the ball?
Yeah.
Gunnar's on the ground with it.
Yeah, you're right. That could have gone. I mean, I don't know how that DB missed it. I don't know how the A&M, because he seemed like he had a jump on it, and he seemed like it almost went through his hands, and Gunnar Helm kind of wrestled it away from him.
I think you need a bit of that Quinn as well at points.
Gunslinger Quinn is like, I can fit it in there.
Yeah, I think a little bit of Gunslinger, because you're not beating Georgia, I don't think, without it, because that was the biggest thing I remember in that Georgia game, was that was the least confident Quinn I saw all season. Even when he wasn't playing well, he was at least, he could throw screens. In that game, he couldn't do anything. He just, every time he snapped, his eyes got real big, and then someone hit him.
Yeah.
Or he started running. I mean, that was basically it every play. And if you at least have the Quinn that says, no, I can get to Gunner Hill. I can get it there. I can get to Golden. I know where he's going to be. I know where I'm throwing it. And I've got just enough room that I can put that ball right where it needs to be. That Quinn is a Quinn that can beat Georgia.
Yeah, I agree. That Quinn, it's crazy. And as you said it, Quinn's looking for Gunner Helm on so many plays where either he's extending the play or moving outside.
Yeah.
We had a couple of those in this game where he's extending the play and then finds Gunner Helm as his check down. And he, remember the touchdown against
Kentucky, right? Yeah, that one where he's scrambling across to his left.
Scrambling to his left and then finds Gunner Helm. You can tell, man, he trusts Gunner Helm. That's his guy. Yeah. He's like, he trusts him and he trusts Matthew Golden in these situations. But I'm with you. I think Quinn, at least early on in these games, he's looked like, you know, kind of the best version of himself. And then we've seen, like I said, that third quarter really show how careless at times Quinn can be with the football. And I know that was some bad luck in there and a great play by A&M. But after the pick six, you would think that there'd be even more attention and focus on ball security, and there wasn't. But none of that really mattered because your defense was so good. So we talked about how great Texas has looked. So we haven't talked a ton about that third quarter. So I didn't want to reflect on it too much because I didn't want to be negative. That's one thing Texas has cleaned up. And it's about critical moments in the game being clutch or being focused and being polished and executing in critical moments. I mean, think about it. As I talked about this earlier, there are certain things in practice of every football practice or certain elements of it that are geared towards specific situations. And honestly, that's like half a practice. Half practice is red zone, third down, 2-minute drill, short yardage drill. You know, they break down practice into these basic situations, right? And so you as a player know how to respond. You know exactly what your responsibilities are. You know how to think it through, all those different things, so you're not surprised by it, so that you are situationally aware. And if you think about Texas meltdown, and special teams is a big part. So you have a special teams periods in practice where you just for 3-4 periods, we just practice special teams. You're practicing the snap and the hold, and we're practicing the punt return, the kickoff returns, and all the different blocks, angles, leverage, everything. Just geared towards special teams. And those specific periods in practice, right, are all about you being comfortable situationally so you don't panic in a chaotic moment of crisis like that, and so you're situationally aware, and so your execution is on point. In Texas, toward the end of the first half, you missed a field goal. That's something you have a specific period of practice for. You had a punt block. You got a specific period of practice for punting, all right, and punt protection, and red zone. You have a specific period of practice just for red zone, just because it's that important. Those elements of the game are so critical and so important that you have practice periods set aside just for those areas. And think about this game. 17-7 game that probably should have been, what, 30, 31-17? You beat them by 10. You should have beat them by 20-plus points. And why didn't you beat them by 20-plus points? Because of, like, four or five plays in critical moments. Red zone interception, red zone fumble, punt block, missed field goal. Otherwise, you blow them out. That is why coaches practice those specific things in planned periods, set aside periods in practice, because there's those moments and those situations are so important that they can turn a game that should be a blowout into a really close football game. That game shouldn't have been that close. Texas controlled that game for three of the four quarters, dominated the lines of scrimmage. Their own damn coach said they were. He said that they were basically physically dominated by Texas. It's rare that your own coach would come out of a rivalry game and be that complimentary, but he said, quote, Mike Elko, hats off to them. They physically annihilated us, is what he said. Yet they only won by 10, physically annihilated them. They had one running back run of at least 5 yards or more. That's it. And yet you only won by 10. critical moments, critical situations. Got to be polished on those things.
Yeah.
You don't get that punt block, you kick that field goal, goes right through the uprights. You have maybe one red zone turnover instead of two. That's a 10-point swing. You get beat them by 20 instead of beating them by 10. All right, maybe you don't even have to deal with. Even if you say you don't have either one of the turnovers in the red zone, you get a field goal and you get a touchdown. You get one point. I mean, you beat them by easily 20 something points.
Yeah,
but
yeah, well, I mean, one of those was a 14-point swing. If you say, or at least a 10-point swing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's a pick six instead of minimum field goal.
That's
10-point swing.
Yep, the boom. And you're like, man, I thought we dominated that. You did.
Yeah.
You did. But all it takes is a few critical errors in crucial moments, and the game is close.
Yeah, it's that one. You go, you know what? You dominated. You played really well for a lot of the game, but coaches still got plenty to yell at you about.
Oh, yeah. Going to be lots of coaching. Lots of yelling. Not guarantee. Oh, yeah. Lots of coaching. They call it coaching. You might call it yelling, but yeah, they'll be getting coached up. They'll
you
be
get that, up. And then we're going to bring back the Georgia game again. We're not done yelling at you about that one yet.
Guys going to be like, I thought we was 11-1. I thought he was 11-1.
I thought he was 11-1.
Don't feel like it.
I forgot. I thought we forgot about that Georgia game. I thought we moved on already.
Thought we moved on. Don't feel like 11-1, but you're right. That's you know what? They'll get coached hard because you're right. That's how good this team is. We're talking about 11-1 team going to the SEC title game, and we all can point out several deficiencies in areas where this team has areas to improve. I mean, special teams is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Special teams is inconsistent right now at best. And we were just an inconsistent special teams, but it wasn't a liability. You can make the argument it was a liability for you in the Aggie game.
Yeah.
It was a liability. Like, it was hurting you.
I mean, it was a missed field goal.
Missed field
and
goal.
Then
block punt.
Block punt.
That
block
punt. I think you had a bad punt, too. You had one punt where it was like, I think, less than 40 yards. Like, you had a questionable punt in there, too.
Yeah.
So that's one phase of the game where you're not consistent and you've been, you know, average to below average. And on offense, you're great on offense, but there are stretches now where you're basically dysfunctional offensively.
Yeah.
The last two games have been these stretches where you're just dysfunctional. Like you can't even operate. For like the stretches, you know, whether it be a couple of plays or whether that be like a series. And it wouldn't be a big deal if you could mitigate the damage, but then when it ends up being a pick six, you're like, okay, well, that's the worst case scenario then. And that's when Sark has got to pivot, and then he's got to stop the bleeding by just running the football and, you know, over-committing to the run game. So this team is really good, and they can win a national title as is, but think about if Quinn plays like first half of A&M Quinn or first half of the Kentucky Quinn, or before he gets hurt, or Michigan Quinn.
Yeah.
And with this running game, and with all the weapons that you have offensively, let's say they become a little bit more consistent too, because Isaiah Bond starts getting healthier hopefully you get a bye after the SEC title game. And, you know, Ryan Wingo now at the end of the season is no longer a freshman, so he's more consistent with Moore and with Golden. And then Helm being what he is, and then his defense, and let's say the special teams now, Bert Auburn finally, you know, rediscovers his clutch gene. I mean, and then the punting. Hell, think about what this defense could be when you start flipping field position.
Yeah, yeah.
For a change. I mean, there's still a lot of areas and room for improvement for this team, and we're still talking about them winning a national championship.
And the good part is, too, a lot of it, especially on the offensive side, special teams probably a little bit more of work, but on the offensive side, you're not far.
Oh, no.
The deficiencies aren't things that are glaring errors of you don't have the players or you don't have the talent or whatever it is. All of it's there. It's just a little bit off, and it just needs to find just that right tweak in the right place to get it where it is. It's like what the run game was. It took a little while to get going, but once you figured out what worked, and I think that Oklahoma game was the first time you really started to notice it got hurt. Sark mentioned it, that Trey just got beat up a little bit and had the hamstring.
Yeah, the hamstring.
And he's like, if he didn't have that hamstring, I think we would have seen it before where we got to now. But there was tweaking it and finding where it is. And the rest of that offense, you just have to fine-tune just a little bit more in the next cute couple weeks to get you where you need to be. That if you can fine-tune it against Georgia and get a big confidence boost out of that win and playing against that defense, and then you get that first round bye to really go in feeling good about yourself, 12-1 SEC champs going into the playoffs, where you get to sit back and watch some football and work on everything, that'd be huge. But you got a huge task in front of you, because if you don't win that one, if you don't win this week, you don't get that bye week, which means you play straight through.
You got to play right away.
And so it is a big game, but you're just tweaking right now because you're so close. You're really close to, again, we said it just a couple things go differently in that game. It could have been 35-0. Easy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's three or four plays going different, and it's 35-0. So that's really where you have to sit and say this team is not far away from being dominant. It just needs a little bit more work.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I totally agree. And just like, you know, you said, this the offense, we've seen it.
Yeah.
We've already seen it. We've seen it. I don't know if we've seen it from the special teams this year. I will say that. Yeah. They've kind of been inconsistent all year. But offense, we've seen the offense actually perform at a really high level. And I think a lot of it's on Quinn. But if they do, that is a scary thought for the rest of college football. I want the bye, though. I think it'd be good for the team. I think they, not only for health, and they're not that banged up, because you look at some other teams' rosters, they're really banged up. But I think Sark is good with extra time to prepare. I want Sark with extra time to prepare for an opponent. I think that will do. I think it could really help Texas get off to a good start against whatever opponent they're going to have. And Texas off to a good start with this defense. Like, to me, I don't. That is the magic. That is the recipe, right? That's the 11 herbs and spices. If they get the fast start, because now remember, we used to say that Sark needed the quintessential Sark run, which happens in the game, right? You get that Sark run, and you know, and I think Sark at times he wants to. You know, he wants to generate that run, or he wants to kind of spark it, and he does it with taking a chance, whether it be going for it on fourth down or, you know, taking a shot play downfield to spark that run. Now with this defense, though, he doesn't have to take it. He doesn't have to take chances for the entire game now to spark that run. All he needs to do is if he can get 17 points on the board at some point in the first half of the game, 17 to 20 points, he knows, well, that's pretty much it. I don't have to take another risk for the rest of the game, really.
Yeah.
I used to have to, like, I got to make sure I can take another. I'm going to go for it on fourth down here. I'm going to take another shot play here. I got to pull out this trick play double pass here to spark things. You don't have to do that with this defense, because you can rely on them to keep guys off the board or keep teams off the board. All right, we come back. We'll reiterate our big announcement. We'll do that and also tell you about what I saw on the rewatch of the Texas A&M game. Lots of Texas discussion on the show today. We'll have all that and more when we return right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real!
My God! Okay, it's happening! Everybody stay calm!
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to jump into Rod's Rant of the Day. First, we do have to reiterate our announcement. We made this announcement earlier today. We didn't want to bring down the entire show with it. But as you guys know, been a lot of changes here at the Horn for the last year or so. The management here have done their best to try to keep things afloat, even though we have kind of stripped everything down to the bare bones. And Patrick and I were, you know, asked a while ago if we wanted to essentially go week to week, kind of month to month, without any their certainty of the future. And we agreed to do that during the Rodcast. So we didn't really know if there was going to be a future. What was important to us is, you know, you guys, and you guys, some of you guys, you know, we appreciate you guys listening to us every day, make us a part of your morning routine. That means a lot to us. So for Patrick and I, that was kind of what we prioritized, that, hey, if people are listening to us, if you guys are still listening to us, then it means a lot to us, and we want to bring you guys the show. Well, we were told, after a lot of effort by management and those in charge to try to transform the station and modify it and adjust it. Those attempts were unsuccessful. So this will be the last broadcast on the horn, ladies and gentlemen. It ain't the end of Patrick and myself, not the end of the Rodcast. Rodcast has been around in different platforms, different iterations. So the Rodcast at some point will be resuscitated, right? At one point. So I don't know exactly how that's going to look. My hope is that I can do it in a podcast form with Patrick and myself at one point. So I'm actually working on that, but there's no final final decision on that just yet. I'll be around. I'm on Texas football right now, so I'll still be talking Texas football or on Texas football. Patrick has been in this market and on airwaves and for different companies, and he's one of the most talented and one of the hardest workers that I've ever known in this industry. So Patrick will be, I think, available in another capacity at one point too, but not on the horn, ladies and gentlemen. The horn, as you know it, this is it for the horn. There won't be any other broadcast on the horn at all. So we wrote it out. We were able to, I mean, we were that band playing on the Titanic until it ended. But what mattered, I'm sure, to Patrick, because I wouldn't give him the floor. What mattered to me, what mattered to him was our relationship with you guys. And so we're grateful. Thanksgiving was just this past weekend. Nothing I'm more thankful for than, of course, my family and health, but also very much you guys. And you guys, consider you guys to be family. So thank you guys for listening, for sticking with us. We know it wasn't easy. We know you guys, your time is valuable. And obviously, it was very frustrating going through all the changes with us. And I know some of you decided to, obviously part ways with us as a result of that. And there's no ill will at all. I totally get that. And I understand it, too. So really grateful and thankful for you guys. No matter what we're doing, we'll let you know about the projects that are happening moving forward. Hopefully, Patrick and I can work together. That's the plan. But if not, don't feel bad for us, man. And don't be sad about this. So don't be, what's the old saying? Don't be sad because it's over. Be happy because it happened.
Yes.
Boom. Let's just be happy because it happened.
Yeah,
man.
No,
we had a good time.
And that's it. You know, thanks to the horn for giving us the time. And then we decided over the weekend, we knew that it was kind of over, but we wanted to come back and give you one last show because there was a couple last ditch efforts to try and save things. But we wanted to come back and tell you face to face, because you guys really, the fact that y'all stuck with us is the reason we kept going and the reason the station kept going. Also, I want to say thanks to the sponsors that stuck with us.
Oh, amen.
Like there's some companies. Please go support those companies that you've heard on us.
Dr. Eckert,
Top Gun, Reynolds have been with us.
Amen.
Those people and some others have been with us for a long time, and very cool. They stuck with us and fought with us even when the things kept changing. They believed in us, and so a huge appreciation to them as well. But yeah, as Rod said, we're hoping to be back as soon as possible doing something else. You know, it depends on how things line up. Because, you know, unfortunately, Rod and I cannot control everything in the world. We're talking to different people. We've been trying to work on it. And, we're going to try and get back on as soon as possible, because we know it is. We can't have Rod Babers off talking about Texas football and getting ready to go with all this stuff. But it's a pleasure. There's no one else I'd want to wake up at 4 a.m. every morning and talk sports with. And Rod, it's a pleasure to work with. I can say I listened to Rod before I got into radio, and it is always a pleasure to work with him because he's just the best.
I appreciate that, brother, and I feel the same about you, man. You're really talented, extremely talented, and extremely, gifted and hardworking, and hopefully we can get to work together in the future. But if not, man, among the really talented people I've worked with, and I've worked with the best in this market, there's no doubt about it, and you are one of them, brother. You're at the top of that list. When I say you're the real MVP, I mean that from the bottom of my heart each and every day. And also, when I say I love you guys, I mean that. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it, man. You guys, big part of my life. I wake up, do prep, thinking about conversations that we can have together, and thinking about, the show and the product and you guys taking time to actually listen to us and, the weekend and whatever happens with the Longhorns and how you guys want to discuss it and what matters to you and what matters to you matters to us. So we appreciate you guys either way. Don't want to bring down your start of your week with it, but this will be the last broadcast on the horn. And I don't even know what you do with the horn now. What do you do with the horn app? I guess you can delete it after we're done.
No,
that's sad.
Yeah.
Don't even take up room on your phone anymore. I don't know.
You see, like, keep it for nostalgia.
I will say that. Yeah, I guess you could. I am proud though, because the Horn at one point, I do think the Horn was the best sports radio station in Austin, in Central Texas. I think it was among that, and not the case right now, because it's no longer what it used to be, but in its prime it was. So proud to be a part of something at one point that I think brought a lot of people joy. That's the whole purpose of this thing.
Yeah.
All right, the A&M, the Texas win over the Aggies brought a lot of people joy. There's no doubt about that. One thing that I noticed in that game, and I always say it's about big games, to win a big game, you got to break tendency. No doubt the biggest tendency breaker was the Arch Manning package. And, you know, I don't know if Sark expected to score on it, because he ended up getting a 15-yard scoring touchdown out of Arch Manning. But he said he had it around for a while, that they just didn't know when to use it. Now, Arch has played, of course, he has started, but to have him in the red zone in a critical moment to throw him out there, that was new, and that was a great way to break Tennessee. End up scoring a touchdown off of it. He ended up using tackle over on the formation. It was 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. Put one Davis in the backfield to give you a two-back look. Went tackle over to the field with twins, and then went zone read with Arch Manning, and the Aggies obviously weren't ready for it. And the crazy part about it, after that, anytime they tried to put Arch in, the Aggies were either ready for it, and then Sark changed his mind and put Quinn back out there, or the Aggies were in a good position to defend it. Whatever he was doing is obviously quarterback run game. They didn't throw it out of that package. So I think ultimately you could make the argument that tendency breaker helped win them the game, because it really got things sparked. And he broke Tennessee not only formationally, because I don't see a lot of tackle over from Sark, but he also did it with personnel, with Arch in there. I think he also was able to do it with the amount of run game that he infused in the initial game plan. We know Sark's initial script, usually 40 plays, they say. He's usually a pretty pass-heavy guy. Not in this game versus the Aggies. I mean, he was below 60% early game, early down pass rate. That's also a bit of a tendency breaker for Sark. He used a lot more 12 personnel. You're damn near 50% 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. He's usually a heavy 11 personnel guy. That a bit of a tendency breaker for Sark, too. So Sark broke tendency at the right time. He was in his creative bag. You had targets to motion. You had put wide receivers in the backfield. So he had some things that he creatively came up with just for this matchup. But none of that really materialized. I mean, the wide receivers in the backfield didn't get you many explosive plays, or any explosive plays, excuse me, but any effective yardage. Your targets to motion, there were some targets to motion where you ended up successfully completing. There was a one to Helm. There was one DeAndre Moore. But considering you had seven different targets to motion, you didn't get a lot of return on that investment. The biggest return on investment of your tendency breakers, in my opinion, from your usual conceptual signatures, was the Arch Manning package. And 12 personnel. You went a lot more heavier sets offensively and just wanted to play bully ball, which worked, especially when it came to the split wide zone, which you had eight explosive runs, two of them from the quarterback, so six explosive runs by the running back, and four of those came from the split wide zone. You had a 10-yarder, 17-yarder, 12-yarder, 16-yarder out of those split wide zones, man. You killed them. And Sark was, remember I tell you this, Sark needs to be an extremist. He was an extremist about what worked. He's starting to become an extremist about what works. If it works, you know what? Let's keep doing it. Let's be gratuitous in our usage of it if it works. And he's doing that a lot in the run game with some of those bread and butter concepts too. So that was the way they broke Tennessee offensively. Defensively, low blitz rate, second lowest blitz rate of the season. A lot of NASCAR nickel that I noticed. Usually NASCAR dimes what they use, third and long situationally, a two-minute drill. But the NASCAR nickel is what they preferred versus A&M. Maybe they thought linebackers against a run-heavy offense worked a little bit better. And run blitzes. Even though they had a low blitz rate, I noticed a lot of run blitzes. Noticed Taft on a run blitz, Anthony Hill on a run blitz early, David Benda on some run blitzes early, try to force some negative plays with that Aggie offense. So there was some tendency breakers on both sides. Big part of why Texas was able to get the win over the Aggies. We come back, we'll play Who Said That? That's when Patrick plays pieces of audio from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world, and based on the context clues or familiarity of the voice, you have to identify and recall who said that. We'll play that right here on the broadcast when we return, right here on The Horn, featuring Patrick Davis on Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming right back. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Smooth Soul Monday edition of the Rodcast. That's when Patrick the Idillionaire plays jams intended to soothe the tortured soul of sports fans who might have had a tough weekend. So we appreciate him hooking us up there. We also appreciate him hooking us up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll today. He simply wants to know, who is the real MVP, in your opinion, of the Texas A&M game for the Longhorns? And 78% of you who took the survey say it's Trey Wisner. Quintravion, as like I said, we're gonna call him for the rest of the we can call him that for the rest of the week. He's earned, I think, that right. And like I said, I don't think any of us saw Quintravion being the bell cow workhorse runner. I don't think we ever thought there'd be a workhorse running back in this backfield. I said they won't have a 1,000-yard back this year. I think he's at 800 something. He actually could end up getting to 1,000 yards.
I think that's why Sark really wanted to put that hamstring thing out there too. So I was saying, no. If he didn't have the hamstring, I'd have a 1,000-yard rusher.
It wasn't my fault. I'd have 1,000-yard back. Yeah, good point about that. Trey Wisner, deservedly so, man. Tip of the cap. What a performance. He's a legend now, brother. Just among Longhorn fans. No matter what you do for the rest of your life, and I hope you accomplish a lot more impressive things and achievements than what you did in that Texas A&M game, but Longhorn fans will never forget it. Quintravion, never forget it. All right, let's play Who Said That. That's when Patrick plays pieces of audio from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world, and based on the context clues or familiarity of the voice, you have to identify and recall who said that.
Raised by my mom. My mom taught me a lot of things about toughness. You know, it just goes a long way to me having a little brother and a little sister. You know, I had to be tough for them, you know, in situations that we grew up in. So, you know, my mom.
Oh, that's Quintravion talking about where he got his toughness from. Say, I got it from my mama. Well, his mama called him Quintravion. Then we should call him Quintravion, too. You're damn right. Thank you, mama, for Quintravion. We're very grateful to
very,
you.
Very thankful. Let him come to Austin.
You damn right, because you said, like you pointed out, he could have been an Aggie.
He could have been an Aggie doing it against us. I mean, he wouldn't have got 186 against us defense. But.
See, he picked the right side, because yes, you know, Quintravion would not have done well going against that Texas defense. Maybe that's why he's so good though, because he faced the Texas defense in practice every day. And then Quintravion balls out. All right, thank you, Patrick, for the last time, brother. You are the real MVP. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you guys all there out there for listening. We really do love you, all right? That is the truth. It is the last broadcast on the horn. Proud to be the last broadcast crew here on the horn with my man, Patrick. All right, for the last time, all right, remember, the revolution would not be televised, but we're talking about it right here on the horn. Remember, we love you guys. We mean that. Take care of yourselves, but more importantly, take care of each other. And until next time, there will be a next time. Hook 'em and peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.